I'm Umyo Hodengekyo. Hello, friends. Thank you for being here. We are going to get back into this very in-depth Go show. Repaying debts of gratitude. And we'll just get right into it and see where it leads us. Anitran continues, the Nirvana Sutra alone, of all the sutras, has passages that resemble those of the Lotus Sutra. For this reason, the Buddhist scholars who preceded Tendai in both northern and southern China were led astray into declaring that the Lotus Sutra is inferior to the Nirvana Sutra, simply on the merits that the Nirvana Sutra was basically Shakyamuni's last instructions as he lay on his deathbed, what would be his deathbed. And as the story goes, as it's told in the Nirvana Sutra, many people, many followers, inner circle, so on and so forth, lay believers, gathered at that place where he lay dying. There's different theories that abound about food poisoning and other things, sicknesses and so forth. Bottom line is, Shakyamuni himself declared that he was soon to enter Nirvana, and he knew that he, of course, we all have to leave this life. So basically, he was leading his inner circle, those that would take on his sermons and had memorized all of his sermons and would go on being teachers and keeping his dharma, if you will, spreading, right? And so as he lay there, he had the ones close to him, his family, Ananda and others. He took the opportunity with every breath before he passed away to continue to basically a sermon from his deathbed, right? But if you read the Nirvana, the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, you will see that he's directing people, his people, to the Lotus Sutra. They're asking him questions like, what are we going to do when you're gone? What are we going to do when you're not here to lead us and show us the way? And what are we going to do? And his response is, keep practicing. Do what you've been doing. You know, look to the Lotus Sutra, the last sermon I gave you, the ultimate teaching. Go back there. Teach each other. Share what you've learned and memorized. Be the Sangha, right? That's basically the gist of the Nirvana Sutra. But because it was the final words of Shakyamuni, some sects in China, hundreds of years later, decided that the simple chronology made the Nirvana the ultimate. It's like they didn't even read it. They just took it as chronology is everything, and they decided the Nirvana Sutra was the ultimate teaching, when the words in the Nirvana itself direct you to the Lotus Sutra, which does in fact say that it is the pinnacle of his teachings, right? Ever teach, now teach, or in the future teach, this is the one vehicle teaching. That's what the Lotus Sutra says. What part of that do you not understand? Anyway, history of humanity, right? So, but if we examine the text, so Nietzsche is going to echo what I just said, of the Nirvana Sutra itself, we will find that as in the Immeasurable Meanings Sutra, the opening of the Lotus Sutra, the comparison is being made between the Nirvana Sutra and the sutras of the Flower Garland, Agama, Correct and Equal, and Wisdom periods that were expounded during the first 40 years or more of the Buddha's preaching life. It is in comparison to these earlier sutras that their Nirvana Sutra declares itself to be superior, not to the lotus, because their Nirvana directs you to the lotus, it by default becomes superior to all the previous teachings, not of the lotus, previous to the lotus. Because it directs you to the lotus. You got to read it. Moreover, the Nirvana Sutra, comparing itself with the Lotus Sutra, says, quote, when this Nirvana Sutra was preached, the prediction had already been made in the Lotus Sutra that the 8,000 voice hearers would attain Buddhahood, a prediction that was like a great harvest. Thus, the autumn harvest was over and the crop had been stored away for winter when the Nirvana Sutra was expounded. See how it's directing you back? The Lotus Sutra is where the answer is. And what I'm telling you right now is that that's where you need to look. That's where the ultimate, the pinnacle of these teachings is. Myoho Renge Kyo. And there was nothing left for it but a few gleanings. Speaking of the Nirvana. End quote. This passage from the Nirvana is saying that the Nirvana is inferior to the Lotus Sutra, right? That inferior in that it is a footnote to the Lotus Sutra, not inferior because it's a bad teaching. Again, translations can be misleading, right? Not inferior because of its methodology or its thinking or in any way a diminishment of its value. It's just in its proper place, serving the Lotus Sutra. That makes more sense, right? The above passages from the Lotus and Nirvana Sutras are perfectly clear on this point. Nevertheless, even the great scholars of northern and southern China went astray. I wonder if any human ego was involved. So students of latter ages should take care to examine them very thoroughly. For the passage from the Lotus Sutra not only establishes the superiority of the Lotus Sutra over the Nirvana Sutra, but indicates its superiority over all other sutras in the worlds of the Ten Directions. Again, superiority in the West, we think of that as, you know, might and right and, again, I keep reminding you, look at this as a thesis, an educational journey through the workings of the mind and the experience of the life process. If you think more scholastically like that, and that doesn't mean you have to be an excellent scholar and have a PhD. What I'm saying is if you think of it in a logical, reasonable manner, instead of an emotional, superior, inferior, that's not what these translations are trying to say. Language is fallible in this way, right? And the people who translate these writings, although they're very forthright and they're using their scholastic abilities, they no doubt are influenced by their own cultural upbringing. So words that seem reasonable to use, they may just glean over certain terms because that's what they know and it seems reasonable, forgetting that words are mutable, and over time and political situations, living in authoritarianship, certain words can take on different meanings. So again, I exhort you, as you study and read through the sutras, no matter whether you're reading H. Kern's late 19th century in the 1880s and 1890s, he did translations of the Lotus Sutra. They're very interesting to read, and you can really see the coloration of language from his staunch Christian upbringing. But he doesn't do it to devalue. Some would say, and I've heard it, I've read it, where some say he was determined to take this, not H. Kern, but other translators, to show the, what was it? The inferiority of the Lotus Sutra and the Buddhist teachings in general, coming from a very staunch Christian background. That doesn't make him a lesser scholar. It just means that you need to factor in his cultural identity coming through and drifting the well. I don't want to say poisoning the well, although Nietzsche would say that. It's very hard when you're investigating deep conceptual information of your own culture, let alone other cultures, foreign cultures, to which you have very little living experience, to adopt terminology that agrees with the meaning of those words. And this is always where we misstep. All of these things that Nietzsche points out about other scholars, eminent scholars, he calls them eminent scholars, but they're led astray. What are they led astray by? Their own cultural biases, right? And that all comes out in language, in words. So once again, you can go all the way back to Shakyamuni. Dig for the meaning. Don't get hung up on the words. That will trip you up. Read through, take in, ingest all the words and everything, but always ponder, what did I just read? What was this? What was the moral or the ethic or the central point in this? Without getting too glued to the words. And believe me, it's not easy. And I firmly believe, after over 40 years of practice, that Shakyamuni's exhortation to study all of Buddhist scholarship is a very wise thing to consider. Because the more you read, the more you see certain themes start to be repeated and evolve over the teachings, the more the meaning becomes just second nature. It's, oh, I get this now. And when you get that aha moment, all those words of inferior, superior, and all that, those kinds of things, and they pop up in everything, they just fall away. You don't even consider those things because suddenly you're making your own language about what you're reading. There's your path. That's your Buddha wisdom. And the more that comes up for you, that will be actual proof from your Daimoku. That's why it's so important. What are the three pillars? Right? Resolve, determination, right? Study, and practice. The three together. So you can be a tremendous scholar, study, but that doesn't open up necessarily the meaning for you in your path, in your life, in your worldview. Doesn't change other than the words, the text. Only when you seek the meaning in the text do you begin to evolve your capacity and your Buddha nature. But if you want that to take a giant leap so that you can actually experience your Buddha nature, you've got to practice. You've got to do the Daimoku, and you've got to recite the Gongyo, and you've got to have this perfect mirror to enliven, invoke your Gohonzon, your inner Buddha nature, your understanding, your Dharma experience, right? And how do you deepen that experience and inculcate it into every aspect of your mind, body, and life? Study. Study brings to life your Daimoku. Your Daimoku and your study increase your resolve and your efficacy in breaking through karmic blockades. And I'm saying that to you who are new to Buddhism or a novice to say. I don't even like that word. You're just starting out. That doesn't mean you can't experience your Buddhahood right now. This is the teaching. It's already there. And to those of you, my friends around my age or maybe older who've been practicing 30, 40 years, understand that and appreciate that your practice thus far, no matter how it wandered or how what forms it took and with what groups, doesn't matter. Your dedication to this practice has already cleansed much, much of your karma. Karma that you don't even know about or understand has already fallen away and cleansed. The fact that you still experience some of the sufferings of life is just a validation that you're still alive and still have the opportunity to connect with your Buddha nature. Okay? So this is, it never ends. The important thing is not to end life. Life is life. Life comes built in, hard baked, hard coded with suffering because of its attachment. The very reason you're alive is attachment to be alive. So Buddhism isn't about ending that. Buddhism is about seeing this process of life with all of its fallacies and its goals and its highs and lows, if you will, as an amazing experience. And in just thinking about life being an amazing, have you ever thought or chatted with somebody, maybe a family member or a group, I remember when I was such and such and such and such, and this happened. I can't believe that I was in that, or I did that, or I said that, or those people thought I was, da 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 da. Right? So even in the natural process of life, we bust through karmic instantiations. And us more elderly practitioners, we more elderly practitioners, we know because we hear ourselves in our past saying, I keep coming up against this same problem. I keep getting involved with the same people. I keep repeating this error, right? About every 5 years, we have this self-reflective moment. Can't believe this is still happening in my life. Well, how much of you are still saying that? I know that's a hard question. But honestly, I can tell you from my own life, I have to try to remember those times. Because for me now, I can't remember the last time that occurred to me, that kind of thought occurred to me. Those patterns have ceased. Sorry, I get emotional about that because I have to remind myself of how much progress I've made in my life. How is it that I'm still here? And believe me, I could tell you stories. That 2020 hindsight thing. With Buddhism, it sends me right to Gohonzon. With deep appreciation. Wow, I've changed so much of my momentum, my life movement. I've influenced it so much through my practice, my Buddha nature. I don't even realize how I've transformed myself to this point. I still have problems. I still, you know, stew, if you will, about world events and the government and pains my friends are going through and wondering, how can I make this change? How can I improve the world around me? But I find the more I live this life, it's hard to say this, but I've I'm less, I'm still a human. I'm still selfish, but I'm much less selfish, much less self-centered. And it's hard to even envision that, but I look at my life today and the way I'm living today and the kinds of people and energies I draw to myself today. And there are occasional bad times. That's life. But there's so much that I can just breathe in and be awed by. I have to take the time to remind my human brain, hey, look at how amazing this is. Every time I take this to Gohanzon, I awaken that. But that's part of my Buddha awareness, isn't it? So, you know, if you think that chanting Daimoku to your Gohanzon is going to instantly make you float in the air on a pedal, that's wonderful imagery. I don't deny it. But that's not the goal. You'll feel that elation, that lightness of being, right? But it's in you. It's in your mind to realize that kind of life experience. And here it is. Just do these three things. Because we're intellectual beings, and we like to feed this brain thing, study is important for us to unglue ourselves from delusion and get moments of realization that provide that. That clarity. So let's continue. We got a little more time. Yep. Ugh, arthritis. Isn't getting old glorious? All right. Earlier, he continues, there were those who were misled concerning these passages. But after the great teacher Tendai, Miao Lo, and Dengyo had clearly indicated their meaning, one would suppose that any person with eyes would understand them. It's clear, after all. But you're dealing with political motivations and power plays and financial wealth and all these other attachments of human nature, right? And Nichiren is just speaking as a scholar, right? Nevertheless, even such men as Chikaku, who he has a special annoyance with, and Chisho of the Tendai school, of all schools, failed to understand these passages correctly. What's it going to take? So what can one expect from the members of these other schools? Right? They're going to be fed these delusions. They're going to be trained into these fallacies. So this is Nichiren as his most compassionate about these other schools, right? Someone might doubt my words, saying that although the Lotus Sutra is the finest among all the sutras that have been brought to China and Japan and in India, in the palaces of the Dragon Kings, the realms of the four heavenly kings, the realms of the sun and moon, the heaven of the 33 deities, or the Tushita heaven, for instance, there are as many sutras as there are sands in the Ganges. Among these, may there not be one that is superior to the Lotus Sutra? I would reply that by looking at one thing, you can surmise 10,000. This is what is meant by the statement that you can come to know all under the heavens without ever going out of your garden gate. But a fool will have doubts, saying, quote, I have seen the sky in the south, but I have not seen the sky in the east or the west or the north. Perhaps the sky in those other three directions has a different sun in it from the one I know, end quote. Or he will see a column of smoke rising up beyond the hills, and although the smoke is in plain sight, because he cannot see the fire itself, he will conclude that the fire may not really exist. Such a person is my questioner, an Icchatika, or person of incorrigible disbelief, no different from a man with sightless eyes. So that's, I think that's a pretty powerful illustration of what in Buddhist scholarship, and certainly what Nichiren uses all the time, is the ignorance of people. They assume and they deduce something falsely because of an assumption based on ignorance. And then they treat it as infallible knowledge. That's a very important insight into how Buddhism sees the mind at work, how easily our egos and our construct of a self, an I, is such a powerful attachment to resolving everything in your environment from this point of view. If you never leave this point of view and try to go outside yourself, as it were, to comprehend something more deeply, then your point of view is limited. It's ignorant. There's a popular term in the last decade around politics that I've heard a lot called willful ignorance. That's probably the next step from what Nichiren is describing here. But there's a very similar aspect to it. This makes me part of the crowd, makes me feel good, so I'm going to say it. There's no deeper thinking to it than that. It's just repetition of memes. It is amazing. I'm telling you, amazing, beyond boundaries, how prevalent that kind of thinking is in our latter age. This is our greatest obstacle to Buddhism. This is why resolve, determination, right, is so important, because that's the only thing that can break through that willful ignorance. Don't let it stop you. And if you know how to not let it stop you, study as much as you can. And when you run into, I'm tired of doing this, go to Gohanzon and chant about it. Your chanting will unlock your Buddha mind, and those objections will just fall away. And you may even become more curious and do more studying. I hope that that's what happens to you. But you should expect it. And if it doesn't happen right away, don't falter. Continue to demand it. Of yourself, you see, your Buddha nature. It will come through. All right. In the Teacher of the Law chapter of the Lotus Sutra, the Thus Come One Shakyamuni, uttering words of absolute sincerity from his golden mouth, establishes the relative superiority of the various sutras he expounded during the 50 or so years of his preaching life, saying, quote, "The sutras I have preached number immeasurable thousands, 10,000s, millions. Among the sutras I have preached, now preach, and will preach," which includes the Nirvana, "this Lotus Sutra is the most difficult to believe," and I would substitute believe there for actually practice, "and most difficult to understand, because it requires study. Because the ultimate method relies, as I've said so many times, on all the previous teachings to fully grasp." The most difficult to actually practice, because you have to confront your human attachments, your samsaric reality. And you can call them demons or devils or Maya or the earth or samsara or whatever, if you think that it's these other things that are keeping you from your enlightenment, understand that all of this rhetoric, these stories, aren't about naming these things and giving them names so that you can see them as outside forces. If that's the way you understand Buddhism, you've missed it entirely. All of these stories, all of these expedient means, are ways for you to interpret what is going on in here. Buddhism is about your mind. And you can visualize, because we're humans, we visualize, we attach ourselves to things with images, pictures, and words. So you can use all these stories to understand these evils, in other words, things that draw you away from your Buddha nature. And you can give them names and all of those fanciful stories. But all of that is about how your mind works. To give you a visualization to say, ha, like a video game, bang, you're out of here. Bang, I'm not listening to you. Does that visualization help? Because when you start to do that, you have to understand it's not the computer, it's not the video game, it's not the story of the game. It's the way your mind is thinking about your life. If you get lost in the storytelling, you're not getting it. That's why we chant Myoho Rengekyo. That's why we have a mandala. That's why we have this ritual practice, this recitation. Because we're speaking to, chanting to, focusing on our Buddha nature. Enjoy the video game. Be sad about things that you miss. That's your human experience. You can't get rid of it unless you end it. But that's not the point of Buddhism. The point of Buddhism is for you to live life well, fully, fully engaged with every moment, knowing that this whole world and your life is yours. Yours in the sense that it is your experience. Not yours as in these beads, this robe, this microphone. Those are possessions. Those are attachments. Something you can't grab and hold and make permanent is experience. How do you visualize experience? How do you visualize yourself as enlightened? Are you dead? Do you visualize your enlightenment as floating through life? As everything turning into golden shimmering things? How do you envision your enlightenment? And before you answer, remember that that enlightenment that you need to envision is going on in here, in your mind, which is not your brain. There's a visualization already. What is your mind? I have videos about that if you want to go look at what Buddhism says about that. But what is your mind? And if your mind is Dharma, the experience, the Buddha experience. You see what Buddhism is? You see what Buddha is? It's not a man. It's not a place you go. It's an experience that you have. What does that experience look like, sound like, feel like? The answer is in Myoho Rengekyo. Because that is your door. That is your direct contact with that experience. Keep doing it until that experience becomes obvious to you, and that will be your awakening. Well, that's a lot to take in, I think, for today before I go on reading. Yeah, I think this will be a good starting place for the next part. I'm going to take my time with this Gosho because it's one of his great in-depth analysis of Buddhism. And I don't want to rush it. I want you to become awakened. I want your enlightenment to happen. I desperately want you to comment below, email me, let me know when your world shakes. I want you to succeed so bad. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. My brothers, my sisters, my family, my sangha, thank you so much for being here. Have an incredible day. Make it so. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. I'll see you in the next one. Thanks.